At work, there are times when I'm able to go in and I'm able to schedule up meetings to talk about one particular item or the other. And there's a couple of rules that I try to make sure that I do when I schedule up a meeting. Number one, when I send out a meeting invitation, I try to give them what we call a PAL. A PAL is something that I learned a long time ago when I first started working. It's an acronym. It stands for Purpose, Agenda, and Limit. Meaning that you tell them why we're going to meet, you give them agenda of the things we're going to talk about, and you say, this is how long it's going to take. So a purpose, agenda, and a limit. But the second thing that I try to do when I try to schedule up a meeting is I try to avoid the time period between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If at all possible, I want to avoid that. And the reason is very simple. When people come back for lunch, you put them in a room, they're going to go, and it's just as sure as the world they're going to do it. They're going to go to sleep. As a preacher, there is one time period for sure that you want to avoid, and it's the Sunday morning right after you spring forward for an hour. And it's because just as sure as the world, the people are going to come in, they're going to sit down and go, boy, I missed my hour of sleep. I think I'll take it now. And they get real sleepy sitting there. So what I'm going to try to do this morning is to try to make it such that you won't do that. But if you get sleepy, feel free to stand up, walk to the back, just take a look at me. I have no problem with that. It doesn't bother me in the least if you're standing and looking at me. I'd much rather you stand and look at me than sit and not look at me. Okay? So, but I do understand that physically there are things that causes more difficulty, causes you to have to put more effort into it. But maybe this morning you can follow along with me. I hope that we can. We're studying in the book of Numbers this morning. In the book of Numbers. And we're specifically studying in the 13th chapter. God has taken the people of Israel. He led them out of the land of Egypt by a mighty hand, performing many wondrous works before the people of Israel and before the Egyptians. He plundered the Egyptians. He used the Egyptians and Pharaoh specifically in order to let the world know, to let all the earth understand that He is God, that He alone has that power. He took them over to Mount Sinai where He brought Moses up on Mount Sinai and He gave unto them the law of Moses, or the Old Testament law, the law of God through the mediator Moses. He gave them instructions on how to build the tabernacle. He gave them instructions on the things that they needed to do in order to worship God appropriately and sufficiently. And now, probably give or take about a year after they have left the area of Egypt, God has now brought them into the land of Kadesh Barnea. This is the area of Kadesh Barnea, just south of the land in which they're going to enter, the land that God had promised to Abraham and to all of his descendants. And they're looking up now over the mountains of the Amorites. And they decide that it is now this particular time, it would appear. If you look it over the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1, the people come to Moses and they say, let's take some men and let's send them out and let's make sure that we know what the land looks like and the direction that we're going to go. And it seemed good to them that they would do so. And so it says here in Numbers chapter 13 that Moses sends men to spy out the land of Canaan. And he doesn't select just any old guys to go and do this. But rather what he does, he takes one person from each tribe, a leader, a man of renown, probably a younger man because of the physical strains of what's going on. But he takes one man from each tribe and he sends them into the land of Canaan, a chief among them. And he sends them, according to the command of the Lord, these men who are heads of the people of Israel. We won't go through the names of the guys because I'll just butcher them as we go. But we'll just skip on down to the time frame in which he actually gives them the command of what they're to do. I want you to notice as they go into the land that Moses says, here are some things that I want you to do. He says, first, I want you to go and I want you to see what the land is. Remember, God has been promising them this land. He gave them the promise all the way back to Abraham. And he's been telling them down through the descendants, you are going to receive a land. And it's a certain kind of land. It's a fruitful land. It's a great land. So you spies, why don't you go in and you see what kind of land this is. And make sure that when you go in, look and see what the people are. The kinds of people that we're going to drive out. Are they a strong people or are they a weak people? Are there a lot of them there? Or is it just a few? When you go in, determine whether the land that's in there, is it good or bad? You see, they had come from the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt was a fruitful land. From the standpoint that it was fed by the Nile River, so they could grow crops and things like that. But what kind of land is it? Is it enough to support this vast horde of people that we have? Are the cities that are in it? Do the people dwell in cities, or do they dwell in tents and in encampments out, or do they have strongholds and forts for cities? And then tell us whether the land is rich or is it poor. Are there trees in it? You see, they come from the land of Egypt where trees were probably not that numerous. So are there trees in this land? Just go in and see what kind of land and what kind of people that there are there. But notice what he says as he sends them off. These are the things that you are to do, but be of good courage. Be of good courage. And when you go, bring back some fruit of the land. So the men have their charge from Moses. And they go out from Kadesh Barnea, which again is right down here at the very south end side. And they travel up through the land of Canaan. They travel up through areas around Hebron. Hebron was the place where God gave unto Moses the promise, or Moses gave unto Abraham the promises. It was the place, actually, real close to there, where Abraham and his descendants were buried, where they had taken the bones of Jacob back, and they were going to take the bones of Joseph back. The area around Hebron, the hill country. But they traveled all the way up further, much further north than that, straight up through the land here, all the way up past Damascus, which, as my old professor in mechanical engineering used to do, he used to draw the chalk and he'd go all the way up on top of the ceiling because his chalkboard wouldn't go high enough. Well, Damascus is way on up here somewhere, okay? It was probably, give or take, around a 500-mile trip, round trip, for these men. And they spent 40 days in the land of Canaan. Can you imagine what it felt like to them? What it looked like to these men? I've often wondered as I traveled around different places around the country, and I would sit there and think, wonder what it looked like to the men who first came here, especially those men from Europe, you know, that kind. What it looked like, how awesome of a sight that it was. These men were used to the wilderness. They were used to the land of Egypt, but now they were seeing the hill country that's associated with the land of Canaan. How beautiful it must have been to them. They came, it says, to the valley of Eshcol, and they cut down a cluster of grapes, one cluster of grapes on a branch. It was so large that it had to be taken on a pole between two men. And they took also some pomegranates and some figs. So having spent 40 days now in the land of Canaan, having spied it out to see what kind of land it is, whether it's rich or poor, to see what kind of people there were they strong or weak, whether they were few or many, what kind of cities that they lived in, they made it back now. They travel back to Kadesh Barnea, and they give the report to Moses and to Aaron and to the people, and they say, the land is just as God has promised. It is truly a land that flows with milk and honey, and here is some of its fruit. And you can just kind of feel the people going, ooh, ah. And yet they didn't stop their report there. If they would have just said, truly it is a land that God has promised, it's exactly as what we thought it would be. It's a land that flows with milk and honey. It's a rich land, a land that we can be fruitful in. It would have been great. But they use the word, however. However, they say, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. And besides that, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The descendants of Anak, Nephilim, giants. The giants are there. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, they all dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites, well, they dwell along the sea and by the Jordan. There's just so many people there. And they're so big. And their cities are so fortified. But two men, Joshua and Caleb, they provide a different report. Hearing the other ten say, but these men are giants. They say, let us go up at once and occupy it. For we are well able to overcome it. Feeling that the people were already being discouraged by the report, they said, let us go up at once. Let's don't delay. We can occupy it. We can overcome it. But the ten would not listen. Rather, they said, we are not able. We are not able to go up against these people. They're stronger than we are. So they brought a bad report. They said the land, it devours its inhabitants. It's like when people go in, either the other people just devour them up, spits them out. It says they're giants. We were nothing but like grasshoppers in their sight. We're insects. They look like giants to us and we look like insects to them. We can't go up and take this land. When the people heard the report of the 10 spies, it says that they raised a loud cry and they wept all night. Now I want you to think for a second. They were led out of the land of Egypt. They had crossed over the Red Sea. They had wandered in the wilderness for about a year. They had been given the law. They had been provided food and everything that God needed to give them, that He provided for them. Now they were on the precipice. They were right there on the edge of being able to go into the land of Canaan, the land that God had promised them. And now they're being told they're too big. The cities are too strong. Just zaps them. No strength. And they cry out and they weep all night. We can't do it. And their disappointment turns to anger. And they grumble against Moses and Aaron, which is in a way of saying they grumbled against God because they were the chosen, appointed leaders of the people by God. And they said, we had died in the land of Egypt. Why did God bring us here? Couldn't we have just died here in this wilderness instead? Why would God want to take us over into this land so that we can fall by the sword? Why would He lead us all this way just to die at the hands of these giants? Our children and our wives will be but prey to these people. Wouldn't it be better if we just turned around and went back? Not only did they say that, they started talking amongst themselves, let's find a leader that'll take us back to Egypt. It's amazing what your perspective does to things, isn't it? Because when they were in Egypt, they were crying out to leave because they were slaves and it was such a harsh environment. And now they say, let's find somebody to take us back. But Joshua and Caleb, Moses and Aaron, but especially Joshua and Caleb, they continue to try to warn the people. They warn them and they try to encourage them. Joshua and Caleb say in chapter 14 and verse 7, the land which we passed through to spy it out, it's an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. If God is pleased with us, He'll give it to us. Don't be afraid of these people. Their protection is gone. God has removed their protection. They're simply bread for us. They're our prey. Our wives and children won't be their prey. They're our prey. But the people wouldn't listen. They were ready to stone Joshua and Caleb as blasphemers. And they probably would have, and yet something happened that stopped them. You know what happened? It says here that the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel. You remember the reading about the glory of the Lord appearing at the tent of meeting? And when it would appear that they could all see it, and every man would stand at his tent while Moses went into the tent. And God tells Moses, he says, "How long will this people hate me? How long," he says, "will they not believe in me in spite of all the wondrous things that I've done for them?" He says, "This is what I'm going to do. I'll strike them with a pestilence and disinherit them. And I'll start with you and I'll make a nation greater and mightier than they are." He says, "You know what? Let's just wipe the slate clean and start all over again. This group of people hate me." As Jace read just a little while ago, they're stiff-necked people. They're stubborn. In spite of all the wondrous works that I've done, they still don't believe in me. We'll start all over. But Moses pleaded for the people and for God by reminding God that all the people, not just the Israelites, but all the other nations, knew that God was with the Israelites, that He followed with them and was with them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And that all the people knew that He had delivered them out of the land of Egypt. And now if He destroyed them in the wilderness, they would say about God, well, He wasn't able to bring them into the land of Canaan. He wasn't powerful enough to bring them in here, and so He just destroyed them in the wilderness. And where would the glory that God deserves be? So he asked God to remember His own character by saying, "Lord, let the power of the Lord be great as You have promised, saying, 'The Lord is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But He will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and the fourth generation. Please pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of Your steadfast love, just as You have forgiven this people from Egypt until now.'" He says, be consistent with Your character. Your steadfast love, forgiving iniquity and transgression, please pardon this people. God tells Moses, according to Your word, I have pardoned them. He says, I'm not going to annihilate them. I'm not going to just wipe them all out. But there's still consequences to their sin. There's still consequences to their unbelief, as the writer of Hebrews calls it. And those consequences are that all of these people that are above the age of 20, they're going to get what they asked for. You remember what they asked for? They said, would that we had died in Egypt, or would that we have just died in this wilderness. He said, well, you're going to get your wish. Because all of you who are over the age of 20, you're going to die in this wilderness. You will not set foot in my land, except for Caleb and for Joshua. All those above the age of 20, all these will fall in the wilderness. Not one shall come into the land which I swore that I would make you dwell, except these two men. Well, hearing the punishment that God had provided, that God had said that He would give to them, the people mourned greatly. That seems to be an overriding theme, if you haven't noticed that when you're reading through that, is that they often just mourn and grumble and complain over everything. But they mourn. And so early the next morning, they rise up and say, we're here though. Since we're already here, we're ready to go. We're ready now. We'll go up and take the land that the Lord has promised. We realize that we have sinned. But Moses told them, why now are you transgressing the command of the Lord when that will not succeed? Do not go up, for the Lord is not among you, lest you be struck down before your enemies. For there the Amalekites and the Canaanites are facing you, and you shall fall by the sword, because you have turned back from following the Lord. The Lord will not be with you. He says, if you go up, God's not with you. You will not succeed. But they went up anyway, despite his warning. And Moses and the Ark of the Covenant stayed in the camp. And they watched as the Amorites came in and defeated some of the Israelites and drove them back. The 12 spies. You know, these 12 men that went into the land of Canaan, they all saw the same thing. They all saw the same land. They all saw the same people. They all saw the same opportunity that they had in going into the land. And yet when they returned to give the report, 10 of them had a much different perspective than the other two. What caused the difference? Well, it wasn't a physical difference. It's not like Joshua and Caleb had a different set of eyeballs. So if it's not a physical difference, then it must be a spiritual difference. You see, the attitude, the disposition, the perspective that Joshua and Caleb had on their trip through the land of Canaan and their report was much different than the other 10. Let's look at just a couple of those differences, because I think what you're going to see is that there are some of the same exact attitudes and dispositions that we can have in the church today. Notice that the 10, they were filled with doubt. It says the men who had gone up with them said, "We are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we are." Doubt is a lack of conviction. I can remember growing up, and you don't hear it as much anymore, but I can remember growing up that my parents would always tell me, and everybody that I knew, their parents told them the same thing, there is no such thing as can't. Did your parents ever tell you that? There is no such thing as can't. And the idea was not that you would never not be able to do something, as much as don't have the attitude and disposition that you won't even try. How many of us fail to try things because we doubt? It's a lack of conviction. The problem with these 10 is that they lacked conviction, but not in themselves, but in the resource that they had. The resource that they had was God. And how could they doubt Him? He had shown them His power in the land of Egypt through all the plagues. He had shown them His power in delivering them out of Egypt and parting the Red Sea. He had shown them His power in providing them with manna to eat and quail to eat. And yet they doubted. We are not able. But Joshua and Caleb, they had faith. Because they said, "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it." You know, one of the great things about that is they said, "Let's don't delay. Let's don't delay. Let's do it now." When you know the right thing to do, when you know this is what God wants you to do, don't delay. Because when you delay, doubt will creep in. Other things that we'll talk about in just a second, they'll creep in. "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it." Joshua and Caleb had faith. The 10 spies had self-depreciation. That is, they kept thinking less and less and less of themselves. It says, and there we saw the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers. And so we seemed to them. And so we seemed like grasshoppers. But you see, the problem was they were looking at the wrong comparison again. They were looking at their physical strength and their physical stature. By the way, do you remember later on in the book of Joshua when they're taking the lamb, did they ever mention the people being giants? I don't recall mentioning them being giants then. It's all a matter of perspective, isn't it? Joshua and Caleb, though, they had confidence. Only do not rebel against the Lord and do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear. They had confidence in the one that was doing the real work. The Lord is with us. The 10 spies were afraid. You see, Joshua kept saying, "And Caleb, don't be afraid, don't be afraid." You know why they were saying don't be afraid? Because they were afraid. You see, doubt and self-depreciation leads to fear, doesn't it? It's a natural, fear is the natural successor to those things. One of the things that when I was growing up, I used to make a few speeches here and there for 4-H and things like that. And people are, I don't want to go first. I always want to go first. Let me go first. Every time, I'll go first. You know why? Two reasons. Number one, the judges don't know how to compare me to anybody else yet. Okay, so they can't judge me based upon how good this person does later. They've already got sitting in their stuff on me, so I'm done, right? And then the second reason is I don't sit there and get scared the whole time. Just let me do it. Boom, get it done. These people were scared. They were afraid. Their doubt and their self-depreciation led them to be afraid of the people. But not Joshua and Caleb. You see, the people, the 10 spies, were causing the other people to be scared, even though Moses had told them before they ever went in, be of good courage. Before they ever went in, he said, do not fear or be dismayed. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 21, as he was recounting this particular event. As he was recounting, he said, I told you, do not be in dread or afraid of them. But the problem with fears is that often we focus on the obstacles, don't we? The potential failures that we can have. That's what our focus is, and so therefore we get afraid of them. Rather than on the opportunities and the potential blessings that may come. Small problems become insurmountable when we focus on them rather than on the potential solutions. And what it leads to is fear leads to paralysis. Not doing anything. Reminds me of the one talent man in Matthew chapter 25 who doubted his ability. Who played down his what he could do, his self-depreciation. And so therefore he became afraid. And he says, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you do not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. He did nothing. And you remember the master's reply, you wicked and slothful servant. But Joshua and Caleb, they had courage. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. They were not afraid of the people. They were not afraid of the fortified cities. They said, let's go up and occupy. The 10 were ungrateful. The 10 were ungrateful. It says in chapter 14 and verse 1 that the congregation raised a loud cry and the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron. They were not thankful for what God had already accomplished and what God had already done and what God was promising to give them. Chapter 14 and verse 27, God says, "How long shall this wicked congregation grumble against me? I have heard the grumblings of the people of Israel, which they grumble against me." Grumbling, complaining, murmuring, they're signs of discontent and ingratitude. Children, listen to that, by the way. If you're not awake, wake up for just a second. Grumbling, murmuring, complaining is a sign of ingratitude, unthankfulness. Grown-ups, if you're asleep, wake up. Because it's the same thing for you. When we grumble about our plot in life and the things that's going on, it's often a sign that we don't look at the blessings that we have and we're focusing on the problems that we have. Don't say that you're not having problems. But don't focus on those. Deal with those. Focus on the blessings. Joshua and Caleb, though, they were thankful. If the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us. It's a blessing. He will give it to us. They understood that appreciation for blessings are key to faithfulness in God's people. Appreciation for blessings are key to faithfulness in God's people. The 10 spies were critical. They didn't believe, and they rebelled. They rebelled against the Lord. Remember, Joshua said, only do not rebel. Moses called it when he returned and when he was thinking about it. He says, you rebelled against Him and you refused to go into the land. God said, go up. We can't do it. We're not going up. It's rebellion. They wanted another leader. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's stone Joshua and Caleb. They rebelled against God. But Joshua and Caleb, they wanted to act. People who know that they are doing the will of God need to be people of action. It is not a time to delay, to make excuses, or to be critical of others. When His will is clear, we should move swiftly and confidently. You remember what David told Goliath? You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, with the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hand. David ran to the battle because he knew it was the Lord's. He was a man of action. It was a difference in their attitudes. Same type of men, leaders, all of them. Same land that they passed through, same people that they saw, same field, same hill, same river, same stream, same trees, and yet had two different perspectives when they came back. Just a couple more things that we can learn from this particular event. Number one, our actions do have an impact on others. That is a very key lesson for all of us to learn this morning, is that our actions do impact others. No, not a single one of us who are sitting here this morning live in a vacuum. And what that simply means is that none of us can say that I don't have an impact on somebody else. You realize that there are some people that you see almost every day. Almost every day you'll see them. There are some people that you see quite frequently. There are some people that you may just every now and then see or rarely see. And there are some people that you'll only see once in your lifetime. And the fact of the matter is, every single one you come in contact with, you have an impact on them, one way or the other. one way or the other, you leave an impression upon them. Leaders, it's especially critical for you. And see, that's when a lot of you just went, good, I'm not a leader. This is only applies to Brother Jeff and Brother Howard and Brother Chris. Well, Brother Jeff and Brother Howard are one traveling, one sick. So Brother Chris is the only one for you this morning. All right, sorry about that. Nope, that's not true. He is a leader. They are our leaders here. They shepherd us, they guide us, but it's not just them. Let me ask you, are you a leader at work? Do you happen to be a boss? Do you happen to be a team leader of any kind? How about maybe at school for you kids? You say, well, I'm not a leader. What, you're not one at school? Do people not look up to you for one reason or the other? Hadley's going, I only got one person at school with me. So guess what? You're a leader. Believe it or not, you're a leader. Right. Some of you say, well, see, I'm not any of those. I'm still good. Are you a leader in your home? You see, mom and dads, grandma, granddads, aunts, uncles, cousins, that catches y'all too. You are a leader. You lead your families. And you leave an impression. You make an impact on people in your life. Every day. Every day. But it's not just leaders. But everyone makes an impression. I want you to think about it just for a minute. Think about the impression that these 10 men had on this great congregation of people. Because of these 10 men, they grumbled and they complained and they rebelled. Because of these 10 men, they were discouraged and they said, nope, we're not going in. Because of these 10 men and the impact that they had on them, 600,000 men, not including the women, died in the wilderness, rather than receiving the promised land. You don't think you have an impact on somebody? You do. You'll either impact them and bring them seeds of despair, discouragement, and distress, or you can bring the seeds of hope, encouragement, and strength. You make an impact. Don't kid yourself. You do. Another lesson, though, that we can learn is that we need to be more like Moses. The more you read and study about Moses, the more impressed you ought to be with that man. God said in Numbers chapter 12, which is another one of the chapters that we were supposed to read this past week, that Moses was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth. Now, we've talked about meekness before, and meekness is not weakness. Meekness is strength under control. Moses was a strong man of strong character. You want a backbone? He's got it. But he didn't think of himself. He was always thinking of other people, especially the children of Israel. He had an ever willingness to think of them above himself. Remember what God said. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send a pestilence and I'm just going to just wipe them out and we'll start all over again, make a nation of you mightier and greater than they are. Now what would you have done? What would most people do? But Moses says, that's not what we want to do. God, that doesn't provide you the glory that you deserve. Pardon their iniquity, he said. Please pardon them. Over and over again, after the golden calf, he had to plead for them. It says in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 9 that for 40 days and 40 nights he pleaded for them. 40 days and 40 nights. We read that and just go right back. 40 days and 40 nights he pleaded for them. After the rebellion of Korah, he pleaded for them. After fiery serpents were sent into the camp, he went to the Lord for them. They had murmured and complained, and he went to the Lord on their behalf. After this occasion Again, it says in Deuteronomy chapter 9, verses 23 through 29, that he went to the Lord for 40 days and 40 nights on their behalf. We need to be more like Moses, thinking less of ourselves and more of others. And then finally there, God rewards the faithful, even if there are few. No one above the age of 20 will enter into that land that I have promised him, except for Joshua and Caleb. And remember what God said about Caleb. He has a different spirit. Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14 helps us to understand that in the last, in the end, the vast majority of people won't be saved, but the few that follow the straight and the narrow, they will. Examples of Noah and others help us to understand that God does reward the faithful, even if there's just but a few. There is great wisdom in studying the Old Testament. Paul tells us in Romans 15, verse 4, that these things that were written before time were written for our instruction, that we, through endurance and through the encouragement of the Scriptures, we can have hope. We all understand that the character of men, our attitudes, our shortcomings, our mistakes, they don't really change that much. We display the same kind of attitudes that they displayed 3,000 years ago. The environment may change. We're not wandering in the wilderness of Paran, but our attitudes are not much different. Our responses to challenges and opportunities in this life are not any different. So as we sit here this morning and as we bring our lesson to a close, I'm pretty confident that if you're sitting there and you've been listening and you've been evaluating yourself, that some of you are going to say, you know what, I've been more like the 10 than I have the 2. By the way, as I was preparing this lesson, that's exactly what I thought. There are many times that I've been more like the 10 rather than the 2. You may see that you've been doubting God. God's promises for you. There's no reason to doubt. You see, doubt is based on the absence of trust. Who else can you trust but God? Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 9, God is faithful. That means he's trustworthy. That means if he tells you something, you can bank on it. There's no reason to doubt. Some of you may be sitting here this morning thinking, well, I can't do anything for God. The self-depreciation thing, that I'm not capable. I don't have the same abilities as everyone else. Really? What happens when you think that way is it leads you to a paralyzing fear and you do nothing. You're afraid of doing something and failing. But you're focusing on the wrong thing. It's not what you can do and your wisdom and your knowledge and your abilities. Rather, it's what God can do through you. God has always promised to be with and to help his people. If you have time this afternoon, read Psalm 34 again. You may have looked back and said, I haven't been as grateful in my life as I should have been. See, God provided us with a great gift and great blessing, and that we are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. Romans chapter 3, verses 24 and 25. It was the only thing that could make us right with God. Have we been thankful enough to be obedient to Him, to receive that blessing? Maybe you've been critical, unbelieving, rebellious against God, against His people, against His Word. See, the thing is, God wants you back. Would you have been part of the 10? Or would you have been part of the 2? See, the thing about asking that question is it's impossible for you to answer it. Impossible for you to say, in that situation, I would have been part of the 10 or part of the 2. But the real question is, which part will you be in today? The very real choice stands before you, that you can choose the side of God instead of the side of the giants. You can choose the side of possibilities rather than the side of problems. You can choose the side of victory rather than the side of defeat. That's all up to you. The question is, what will you do? We hope and pray this morning, as I try to find the right slide, that you will make your life right with God. If it's not right, if there's any way that we can help you, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?